Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, March 21st, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The U.S. Coast Guard is offering free safety exams to all commercial fishing vessels. The program is so fishermen can ensure their boats meet the current fishing regulations before the halibut and sable fisheries open in Alaska this Saturday. KCAW's Ann Bryce reports.
The safety exam is not mandatory. Sitka examiner Steve Ramp says it's in the best interest of the fishermen to have a check done.
It's a good program. It doesn't cost them anything. There's no ramifications if they're short on equipment. We give them 30 days to get their equipment, and then we give them the decal after we verify that. So there's no fines involved, no costs involved, and it's a good way to make sure these fishermen get home to their families after a trip.
The safety requirements and the length of an exam vary depending on the type of vessel. A large processor has more regulations to meet and might take 2 hours, while a state-numbered vessel fishing within 3 miles of shore usually takes about 30 minutes to check.
In general, the big safety equipment factors are their life raft, their EPIRB, emergency position indicating radio beacon, their immersion suits, if they have to go into the water shy of the raft, fire extinguishers, life rings, all the safety equipment on board. For the bigger boats that fish offshore, they have to have bilge alarms so they know if they're taken on water. They have to have general alarms so if something goes wrong, they can notify the crew no matter where they are on the boat. We also make sure they have their required navigational publications, charts, sufficient radios and communications equipment depending on where they are.
If boats do not meet current regulations, fishermen are subject to fines, and for extreme violations, the Coast Guard will escort them to the dock and not let them back out to sea until the problems are fixed. The safety exam is mandatory, however, for fishermen whose insurance companies require it, or if a NOAA fish observer is scheduled to go on a boat, because the agency requires a boat to have a current dockside exam. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
To know what to expect during an exam for your vessel, you can call examiner Steve Ramp at 966-5620 to set up a free pre-exam meeting. You can also go to the Coast Guard's website and generate a custom checklist. That link can be found on our website, kcaw.org. Legislation that would overhaul the state's oil tax system has been moving its way through the Senate. On Tuesday, the bill landed on the floor. The current version raised the base tax while giving companies a credit for every barrel they produce, but it also gets rid of a mechanism that raises taxes when oil prices are high. The overall effect is to bring down taxes on oil companies with the goal of spurring production. While there wasn't a formal debate on the bill, the small Democratic minority took advantage of the procedural motion to get answers on what changes would do to the state treasury. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
It took an hour before the Senate even decided to swap out Governor Sean Parnell's original proposal for a version that legislators had revised over the course of weeks. Most of the time, adopting a committee substitute is a simple matter of process, but Democrats used the move to pepper the majority with questions about how the bill worked and what the ultimate fiscal impact would be. It started after Senators Kevin Meyer and Peter Michicki, Republicans who work for ConocoPhillips, offered to recuse themselves from voting because of a perceived conflict of interest. After they were overruled, Senator Johnny Ellis of Anchorage wanted to know something basic about how different versions of the bill compared to each other. Then, Senator Hollis French, also of Anchorage, asked about a provision that would lower the base tax rate by 2% after 2016. French wanted to know whether that cut was automatic or if it was tied to production. Senator Kevin Meyer explained that the bill should have the impact of encouraging more oil production. French wasn't satisfied with that answer.
But I didn't hear what part of the bill does that. Is there a section in the bill that does that, or is it simply a wish and a hope that they'll do as we ask?
Yeah, brief at ease.
Minority members asked question after question about how tax credits for new oil in old fields would work, how a credit to companies who manufacture equipment used for oil production would be applied, and so on. After almost every question, Senate President Charlie Huggins, a Wasilla Republican, would rap his gavel for an at ease so those carrying the bill could get answers from aides and administration staff. There were nearly a dozen breaks in total. At times, Democrats' questions went beyond the bill's mechanics and bordered on political statements. Without the numbers or political clout to push their own oil tax bill through, the minority has been on an aggressive public relations campaign to drum up opposition to the bill, which they argue will cost the state billions of dollars in lost revenue. Senator Bill Willikowski of Anchorage has been an especially vocal critic of bringing down oil taxes, and he expressed concern that the bill under consideration didn't generate enough revenue for the state when oil prices are low.
What are we doing in this bill to protect Alaskans at the low end? What's the difference between the resources version and the finance version? I want to know a number. I want to know how much more, less, or the same this is compared to ACEs and compared to the resources version. If I can't get an answer, say I can't get an answer. Say I don't know.
Amendments to the bill should be offered tomorrow, and members of both the minority and the majority are expected to offer changes. A vote could come during the same session, and if it passes, the bill will then go to the House for consideration. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The gold medal basketball tournament happens this week in Juneau. More than 20 teams from Metlakatla to Yakutat are competing in three brackets, but it's more than a sports event. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld talked to some of the veterans and others behind the scenes and filed this report.
Fans cheer as Huna scores against Yakutat in a hard-fought gold medal tournament game. Elders in wheelchairs, texting high schoolers and toddlers in diapers fill the stands of the Juneau Douglas High School gym for one of the nearly 40 tournament matchups.
Well, we always look forward to seeing everybody that comes from the villages to come into Juneau.
Sasha Sobolev works the tournament as a member of the Juneau Lions Club, which organizes the event. He played for the KKNB team when he was teaching there, and he remembers going to gold medal games as a kid.
My older sister and I would go up there with Dad and play among the bleachers while all Derp Herbie Dietrichson and Moses Johnson and those old-timers that are long gone were playing ball. So it was quite not only a Southeast event, but a very big community event that brings everybody here for a wonderful thing called basketball.
My first gold medal tournament was years ago with the KKNB, and there were 12 teams, you know, big cities in it like Ketchikan and Sitka and Juneau.
Kloax Dewey Scan is a longtime player and gold medal Hall of Famer. The annual event, this is its 67th, is more than sports. Tables set up outside the gym offer health education, voter registration, and crafts, traditional and otherwise.
We're here just to help gold medal bolster their sales of their apparel.
Evangeline Willard Hoy of Haynes runs Clinkett Ink Designs. She puts town logos and other graphics on tournament gear sold by the Lions. Her own shirt has a picture of her father playing many years ago at gold medal against Dewey Scan.
My dad is Evans Willard from Clequan, son of Mildred Sparks, and a very large family. And he was quite the ball player, from what I understand, from just hearing from friends and family.
Gold medal is a basketball tournament as well as a regional community builder. Sobolev of the Lions Club says it's also a big fundraiser.
It brings in money so that we can turn around and award those things back to the communities by way of scholarships that we hand out for students, to other nonprofit groups, and sometimes there's tragedies that happen and we donate money to the families, and so we continue to do that endeavor.
I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from the gold medal basketball tournament in Juneau.
Harriet Shermer is giving new life to an old practice. She's teaching people about ethical wills, which leaves ideas rather than objects to loved ones when a person dies. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Maybe the things that you have to teach your family are more important than the things that you leave for them.
Harriet Shermer believes in passing on ideas to future generations. That's why she's fascinated by ethical wills. Traditional wills bequeath a person's possessions to loved ones when they pass away, but ethical wills are meant to carry on a person's thoughts. Shermer says that while this may be a new idea for some people, it has deep historical roots.
It's an old, old tradition. They go back to the book of Genesis. They say that when Jacob called his family together before he was going to die, basically that's what he was doing.
Shermer says an ethical will can contain any information a person wants. It isn't just for ideas and beliefs. it can also be a way of telling someone things that have never been said before.
But, you know, that can tell the next generations things that you've valued. It may not affect the way they live, but at least they know a little more about your, maybe you're valuing them in ways that they didn't know. A lot of people are not very talkative about the things that are important to them. Most of us aren't.
She says a person may even choose to write about memories that are not so happy.
One of the things that people sometimes put in there are the things that they wish to forgive people for, or that they wish they were forgiven for. But it should not be something that binds the people that are left.
Shermer says it can be helpful to use starting points when writing one. These can be anything from things I care about, to my favorite memories, to things I would change if I could. She says it can be tough to start writing, and using these guides can help give the will some structure in the beginning.
It's given me something I can work with. I've already tried starting one for myself. I haven't finished it. And that's one thing about ethical wills. You can always, like other wills, you can always change them as long as you're of reasonable mind.
The most important thing is that it brings some peace to the writer and the reader.
And that's Shady Grove Oliver reporting in Wrangell. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.